Now on RN Drive, it's time to look back at that decade that's just too big and important to be contained by only 10 years. That's right, it's time for 50 years of the 60s, and once again, your guide to the motherlode of culture and world events. That is the 60s. 60s aficionado Mark Sutton, hello.
Hello, good to be here.
Now, as important a moment as it is from 1963, we have had a lot of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech over the last couple of weeks. Tell me we're not going back there right now.
No. This time we're going to cross over the Atlantic Ocean, and we're going to focus, of all places, on Algeria.
Oh, so, which in the 60s was a bit of a troubling place, wasn't it?
Yes, it had just come out of almost a decade of war. And so what we're actually celebrating is the conclusion of that war and the adoption of the first constitution of Algeria and the swearing in of the first president.
Okay, so what led up to the momentous event that we're marking here?
Well, yeah, as I say, the Algerian War of Independence had been raging since about 1954. Well, I think perhaps a lot of people, like me, before this, will be most familiar with that through... There's a film called La Battaglia di Algeri, which is a great, great sort of... It's a fictional film, but it's done in a sort of documentary style about the violence.
And the conflict. I think I have seen it, but if it's the one I'm thinking about, it's the conflict that a lot of the soldiers felt... internally as they were going through the process.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the focus. And it doesn't really come down on either side. It doesn't really have any political sort of motivation beyond the effect on the soldiers and the sort of it's a disturbing film, but it's a great piece of cinema. And it was actually banned in France for 5 years after its release.
Understandably. So tell us a bit more about the conflict itself.
So yeah, the French have been in control of Algeria since the 1830s. And there'd been sort of numerous opposition movements by the native Algerians, but it was in the mid-50s when things really flared up, and that was partly because Muslim Algerians weren't given the same representation and the same rights as non-Muslim Algerians, which unfortunately is a bit of a story of a lot of colonial powers, you know. So basically the conflict was between the Algerian independence movement and the government, but then it sort of spilled out. There were conflicts on the pro-government sides were fighting each other, people who thought... who were for de Gaulle, people who were for this and that. And then on the independence side, there were fights between the different independence groups, you know, the Algerian National Movement versus the National Liberation Front, which sort of reminds you grimly of the life of Brian with the sort of infighting in these kind of forces.
So while this was all going on in Algiers, what was the mood like back in France and indeed the information like back in France?
It was the big story of the decade, because I think France was keenly feeling after the war the loss of the colonial powers. And there was a thing that's called the Café Wars, which is a series of bombings and assassinations that happened on mainland France. Lots of cafes and things, you know,
being targeted,
exactly. Mm. Estimated cost of about 5,000 lives. So it was a huge impact on native France.
And what brought it to the end, finally? How did they resolve it?
Charles de Gaulle came back into power. And he ultimately put the issue of Algerian independence to the Algerian people. You know, surprise, surprise, let's let them decide what they want to do. And that was a referendum, which was overwhelmingly supported for independence.
Okay, and so it's this that we're marking September 1963. 50 years later, this is what we're marking today.
We're marking a slightly after this, which is they did that referendum which said, yes, we'll be independent. Then they did another referendum 50 years ago this week where they decided on their constitution, decided on their president, and sort of officially became their own nation, as it were.
Now, of course, there's been a lot of conversation today about politics and what it takes to be a leader. But the leader that they chose, he was something of a swashbuckler, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's a rather divisive figure, President Ahmed Ben Bella. He could have been a football player in his youth. He actually played a few games for Olympique de Marseille and scored a goal. But he decided, no, he's not going to play football. He's going to pursue politics. So he fought for the French in World War I, but refused an officer's commission because of basically the way the French were treating his native Algerians in his home country. And then he joined the National Liberation Front. He was sent to prison. He then escaped. He was then arrested again. But when this referendum happened and they became independent, he was kind of the person the nation looked to, perhaps in a similar way to the way the nation looked to Nelson Mandela as sort of a leader of the liberation movement.
Mark Sutton is with you today, taking you back 50 years to 1963, as he does quite often here on Friday Drive, and looking at some of the major markers of the 60s. We're talking about that period in Algeria, that very bloody period, and the quest for independence. Now, his presidency, how was it marked? Was it a successful term that he had?
Well, he was a socialist, and he was very popular originally because he had these sort of generous land reforms where he basically gave a lot of farms and things to landless farmers and things like that. He led the nation in the Sand War, which was a war against Morocco, and that was fairly successful. But he sort of became increasingly dictatorial, and eventually he was deposed in 1965. He was under house arrest for a few decades, and he was years in exile. But when he died, which was only last year, Algeria declared 8 days of mourning for him, and he's now considered a national hero.
All right. All that was going on in Algeria, the blood and the fighting. But elsewhere, of course, the 60s raged on. What else was going on 50 years ago this week?
Well, yes, in a little time left, I want to draw attention to two 50th birthdays.
Right.
So let's just play what to many might be a familiar introduction.
Name? Richard Kemble, Doctor of Medicine. Destination, Death Row State Prison. Richard Kemble has been tried and convicted of life, but laws are made by men, carried out by men, and men are imperfect. Richard Kemble is innocent. Proved guilty, what Richard Kemble could not prove was that moments before discovering his wife's body, he encountered a man running from the vicinity of his home, a man with one arm. A man who has not yet been found. Richard Kemble ponders his fate as he looks at the world for the last time and sees only darkness. But in that darkness, fate moves its huge hand.
So what's this?
Yes, so many might remember. Well, it's The Fugitive. I mean, that basically explains the plot better than I really could. People probably might be more familiar with the Harrison Ford film version. But it was a great and long-running show, about 120 episodes The Fugitive ran for, the story of David Kimball hunting down the one-armed man. The finale in August 1967 actually broke the record then for viewers watching the finale of a TV show. And people might still remember the exciting conclusion. It was only beaten, if ultimately, by MASH.
Right.
Which I think beat like every
massive,
record.
Yeah. Okay, so that was The Fugitive 50 years ago this week. And also some music.
Yep, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about, look, one of my favourite songs was number two this week, which is as high as it got on the Billboard charts, the Ronettes' Be My Baby.
Now, this is a classic piece of 60s pop, isn't it, for a couple of different reasons, mainly because of the producer.
Yeah, so Phil Spector, you know, who these days, what he subsequently went on to do, makes him a troubling figure. But,
languishing in jail. But
exactly. But it's probably the best exponent of his wall of sound technique. It also uses the Wrecking Crew, which is a great backing group. You know, there's a documentary came out a few years ago about them, a bit like the Standing in the Shadows of Motown guys. They played on this sort of huge array of hit recordings from Nat King Cole to Bing Crosby to the Byrds version of Mr. Tambourine Man. I mean, the Wrecking Crew were just on every great record that was made in California, it seems like, sometimes. So it's them playing with the Ronettes, and look, it's just a cracking song 50 years ago this week.
Do we know whether Phil Spector had the revolver on the desk at the time, which he was known to do, certainly later on in his career?
Look, I haven't heard specifically about the recording of this song. It seems too jaunty to possibly have the violence behind it, but, you know, who knows?
And a lovely way to finish up. Mark Sutton, our 60s aficionado. Thanks ever so much.
Thanks so much for having me.